The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our award-winning author events series, recorded live at the Parkway Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, our unique and inspiring collections, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Welcome to the Free Library of Philadelphia author events. Today is a grand experiment. This is our very first genre event. We've got romance authors, yay! I know, it's so exciting. So just so you know, there's no recording and no flash photography during this program, okay? And we actually, most of these events end up as podcasts on the website, freelibrary.org, so if you wanna revisit the excitement that is today, in about a week it'll be up there. You can also go back and look at a bunch of the other stuff that has come up in the past. Diana Gabaldon was here a couple of weeks ago. That's a really great one. After the discussion tonight, there's going to be a book signing up in the lobby, so stick around. We are also going to have a little raffle here at the very end. We've got fabulous prizes. So this is our first ever romance panel event. My name's Dina Halick. I'm the head of the fiction department here at the library. Romance is my thing, so I'm really excited about this. And tonight we have got three amazing authors. We've got Megan Hart, we've got Sarah Humphreys, and we have Jerry Croteau, who are going to sit and have a discussion with me. And then at the end we'll have time for questions, because I have my list of questions that might not be the same as your list. So get your questions ready. So I am going to ask them to come to the stage. Sarah, Jerry, Megan, come on down. Megan! Hello! Jerry! And Sarah, who's the only one who knew how to get the chair to the chair properly. Sarah, Megan, and Jerry were very... Ooh, I'm feedbacking. There we go. We're very gracious to come, and Sarah especially stepped in at the last minute for, unfortunately, an author who was having a family emergency and couldn't come. But I'm very excited to have them. This has been in the works since last year when I sat next to Megan on the train back from New York and kind of wouldn't let her go until she promised to come and do an event here. So, am I not loud enough? Are we good now? Yes? Awesome. Oh, now I can't like read over it. So let me just have you introduce yourselves. Mm-hmm. Sarah, why don't you let us know who you are and what you do?
Okay, my name is Sarah Humphreys, and I write paranormal and contemporary romance for Sourcebooks. I am married to my college sweetheart, who's out in the audience, for almost 20 years, and we have four teenage boys. It's not a house for the faint of heart. And Vampire Trouble comes out, my next book comes out tomorrow, actually. So, and I'm really happy to be here, so thanks for having me.
Thanks. Jerry?
Hi, I'm Jerry Croteau. I write contemporary military romance. I've also done some historical. My publisher just asked me to do another World War II story, which will be coming out in November. It's two parallel plots, contemporary and World War II. I'm a Naval Academy graduate and a former Naval Intelligence Officer, which I know doesn't seem like it would segue into a romance writing career, but it has for me. I've always loved to read. And it was my escape when I was working on some hard stuff back in the day. I got out after 9 years, and my husband continued his career for 27. And he just retired a couple years ago, and we've settled in central Pennsylvania. So I'm hoping to bring to the page what I've seen around the world. Thanks.
Thank you. Megan.
And I'm Megan Hart. I write a little bit of everything from horror to all many different genres of romance. Bring me down. I'm probably best known for writing erotic fiction. I write for Harlequin, although I've written for several other publishers in many different formats. I was at the forefront of digital publishing, which is now very popular, so that was pretty exciting. And I don't have a lot of exciting other story. I've never been anywhere or done anything except
to
be a writer.
You're not a naval intelligence officer. You're just not telling us.
I am not a naval intelligence officer.
So how did you get started writing romance? Like, what made you decide to step out of naval intelligence or, you know, raising kids and well, you... We'll start with you because you've been doing this since you were born, pretty much. How did you start writing romance?
I started writing romance basically because I liked to read romance. When I was a senior in high school, I had a job at my local grocery store, and every week they would get in the new books, and I would spend a portion of my paycheck on the books, and a lot of the books they had on the little kiosk were romances, and I just fell in love with them, and I loved reading them. And so when I've always known that I wanted to be a writer, and I actually started writing science fiction, fantasy, and horror, but when I knew that I wanted to become a published writer, romance seemed to be the way to go. It seemed like it was a much bigger market, and I loved to write those sort of stories, so I started writing romance.
Jerry?
I remember writing an in-depth story in second grade that got a lot of attention from my teacher and parents. And I felt guilty because I had plagiarized Dr. Seuss. But at least for the idea about the goldfish in the bowl, at any rate, I've always loved story and I've always loved to read. And to be a good writer, you have to be a voracious reader. It always starts with reading. And I read, and always loved English. But because English was easy to me, I grew up in the 70s. So if you were a girl and you were good at math and science, it's kind of where they pushed you. And that's how I ended up looking at the Naval Academy for college. I also wanted to serve my country. I always had that drive as much as the passion to write. So that's what I did. And it took me away from the writing for a bit. I loved English at the Academy, but I majored in political science. I have the equivalent of a minor in Spanish as well. And, you know, I got to see so many things around the world, but even when I was deployed during the Cold War to different places, I had that box of Harlequins delivered to me from time to time, so I'd have books to read. And I grew up seeing my mother read, and she had stacks of romances on her end table, her nightstand next to her bed, and I would read them, and I fell in love with the genre then. Although when I wrote my first book, I would have told you that I write literature with love stories. You know, I wasn't going to say romance because it was always slam, so it was horrible. And of course now I've educated myself and I hope to educate more people in the genre. Nobody would say boo if I wrote mystery or thrillers, which I do, and I'm going back to romantic suspense. But I always have to have that element of the love story and the happily ever after in my books. They just like I like to have dead bodies in my books. I can't do one or the other.
Well, I was an actor. That was my original career path out of college. And then I got married and had four wonderful, loud, crazy boys. And I was home full-time with my kids, and I really felt like I was missing a creative part of my life. And I loved reading, and I loved romance novels. In fact, Christine Feehan's novel, Dark Prince, was the first. And I remember picking it up and being like, where have you been all my life? I didn't even know these books were out there. Because I loved to watch, I used to watch soap operas. And Star Trek. And if you put the two together, that's paranormal romance. So there we have it. I went and then read every single book she ever wrote, and Laurie Handeland was another one of my favorites. And so when I wanted to get back to my creative self, I had an idea, and I just sat down and wrote and haven't looked back since.
So you were all romance readers before you became romance writers. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
It's hopeful.
Yeah. I like the happy ending. I like knowing when I pick up a book, at least at the end, it's not going to be super depressing. I'm going to get that happy ending.
Well, the world is so, I mean, you turn on the news and you can't swing a cat without hearing something dreadful happening. And I think it's great to, like you said, you pick it up and you know you're going to have a happy ending. And
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's if you're going to escape, why escape into something sad, right?
I agree.
So,
well,
I've read some of your books. They're not all 100%.
My books are often sad, but hopefully at the end it all works out.
Yeah. So did you get into romance, Megan, because you figured it was the most lucrative of all the ones that you were thinking of writing?
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was a practical business decision in some sense because romance was and still is the biggest selling, or at least one of the biggest selling genres, and. I liked writing those stories and I liked reading them, so it wasn't like I chose to write mysteries because they sell the best, but I hate mysteries. I mean, I really enjoyed it as well. But when I looked at, I was also writing science fiction and fantasy, okay, but that just didn't sell. So when I was looking at how do I make this my career, my job, this is what I want to do, what should I focus on? I mean, I could write for the love of it forever, or I could write something that I enjoy and also might be able to sell.
Mm-hmm. That is the perfect best of both worlds. You're doing something you love and you're getting paid for it, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's awesome. I have an awesome job.
Did you guys have to think, you know, what should I do? Or did you two know that this is what I was going to write? I'm going to be a romance writer.
Cheer.
No, I didn't know I was going to be a romance
writer.
Oh, no,
you were going to be literary.
Yes, I was going to be literary. Or, you know, and also horror, because I do like that. And I'd done some short stories. Again, had no idea how to market them. Then I had my first book that I wrote, remains unpublished and should forever. It had an angel priest suicide victim that the heroine saved in the first chapter. I mean, yes, it should stay under the bed. I really didn't know, but what happened was I found Romance Writers of America. We were on a tour, a Navy tour in Memphis, Tennessee, and that's where I found River City Romance Writers, and the rest is history. I went to my first local conference in 1999, then I went to a national RWA in 2000, and I studied, you know, with my military training, I studied the other authors who were doing so well, and I thought, okay, they all started in series category romance, which is what I attempted to do, and I actually ended up selling to a brand new series as one of their first authors. I won a contest that my publisher had. My goal was to write 50 books and then write the big blockbusters. And with the advent of the digital era, all that's exploded. Publishing's just in a big cluster right now. But actually, I think they're coming out of the cluster. I think it's the sprinkles are coming now. It's good. It's okay. But it was rough there for a few years.
How are you on your 50 books?
I'm not on 50 books. I think this year we'll see the 8th book published. I'd have to count.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks, yeah.
And always romance?
Yes, and paranormal. I love the idea. I love the world building. I think that's so intriguing to me, and it's such fun. I mean, you get to literally make up all the rules. Their only rules are the ones that you create, and then you get to break them when you feel like it. If you do it the right way, you can't just break them for the heck of it. But yeah, always romance. I didn't really think of it like, oh, I'm going to write a romance novel. I just had an idea for this. My first series is called The Amaveo Legend, and the Amaveo are a race of shapeshifters. So I had this kind of idea for this world and these creatures, and the love story was all, you know, part of that and finding their mate. But I didn't think of it like, I'm going to write a romance novel. It was more, I had an idea for this world and these creatures and this series, and everything came from there. But I love love, and of course, I was chatting with somebody at a conference recently. It's like, why do you think people, why are they drawn to it? Why do they like romance so much? And I think it's because it's all about the beginning. It's all about the chase and falling in love and all that newness and, mm-hmm. you know, and getting back. And as a writer, you get to get back in touch with all of that. So it's fun, you know, the chase, the beginning.
Yeah, it kind of goes to the happily ever after. The big wedding night or
whatnot.
Well,
nobody wants to read about the middle. You don't want to be picking up people's laundry and tripping over their shoes. And, you know, everybody lives that. You want, you know, we all live the beginning at one point. But
right. Yeah. Right. It's always the possibilities are always there.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Right.
So I was going to ask you a question about the perception of romance writers. And then I was like, oh, no, would that be too negative?
Oh, come on.
Because I think a lot of us in the room, we love romance, and we don't understand why we get picked on a lot. So what do you find that people make assumptions based on what you write?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I get a lot of, because I write a lot of, or I'm widely published in erotic fiction, I get a lot of, so, you do everything that you... I'm like... I wouldn't have time to write books if I was doing all of that. It depends on who's asking and how I feel. Sometimes I'll say, why, yes, of course. Sometimes twice. But yeah, I definitely get a lot of weird, you know, weird, what I think are inappropriate questions.
Strangers in the street coming up to you.
I get a lot of people sharing stories with me of things that I would really don't, I just... don't need to la 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 la.
And then you do paranormal, and especially with the huge vampire boom that has been the last few years. And I know you had said earlier that you had the idea for your vampire books earlier, but then Twilight came out.
Twilight was out, and I didn't want to to compete with that, quite frankly. I thought, you know, it's very, the market was saturated. And I mean, the vampire world that I've got going is completely different, and there's no sparkling or anything. But yeah, no. But I think people, I like the reaction when you, I love watching people when they hear, what do you do? I write, oh, what do you write? Romance novels. It's usually, oh. Or really? Or, oh, I love romance. What do you write? But more than anything, more often than not, it's, oh. One lady actually said to me one time, oh, so you write that schlock they sell at the airports. I said, yes, yes, I write schlock.
And you're probably selling better than a lot of people who write the more literary stuff.
You know,
I think I'd prefer schlock to so you write porn.
Yeah, porn. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to, I remember looking at her and thinking, did she really just say that to me? But yes, she did. I mean, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, people, you know, they say, oh, it's this. They look down their noses at it. But, you know, there's a reason it's the largest selling genre of fiction. Mm-hmm. It's not just because the guys on the covers are hot, and they are. But I think that's a lot of it, too, the Manchesty covers and, you know, the bodice rippers from back in the day.
Yeah, they're called bodice rippers for a reason, mm-hmm. usually the cover.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, and so you write military.
Well,
romance.
I have military characters, yes.
Yeah. Do you have a different kind of reaction than...
My reaction is people don't... They're often not interested unless it's a SEAL, and they have to... You know, that's when I will remind them that the SEAL that we read about in romance most of the time, a lot of the time, is it's a fantasy we buy into. Mm-hmm. So my characters I try to imbue with reality because I served and because I served as a Navy spouse. But on the issue of the romance genre... my daughter came home in seventh grade. She's my youngest and about ready to go to a wonderful college. And she said, Mom, everyone in my class thinks you write erotica. And I said, well, Ellen, you can explain to them that erotica is a woman's sexual journey, whereas I write about a couple's romantic journey and about, and it has a happily ever end, you know, happily ever after ending. And she did go back and tell those kids, and of course, I don't know if that was a disaster, but I just figured if they're old enough to ask the question, then they need to know the answer. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it's just pure ignorance. The comment that I least like is when someone says, oh, I don't read that trash. Mm. Oh, mm-hmm. So they just totally dissed what I wrote. But then I find that, no, indeed, they do read that trash because I see what's in their beach bag. You know, mm-hmm. they just don't know that it's romance genre, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, they're not reading Tolstoy. And I love to read literature. I love to read anything that's well written. And that's another way to know you're a writer if you're sitting out there wondering, am I a writer? If it's well written, I will read any genre or mm-hmm. subgenre. I didn't know that I was per se a romance writer. It just came out in my voice. And I think that's what happens. I think for a lot of authors, who you are comes out mm-hmm. in your voice. Now, I get flack at times from my husband. I don't ask him to... I'll have him look at things to make sure that the military parts of it are accurate, and especially my World War II stories, because he's a World War II expert. And he has issues when I have men in khaki uniforms with erections. He's like, really? Do you have to describe an erection in uniform? And I'm like, well, it's from the heroine's point of view, and she noticed that, you know, she turned him on. It's part of my job. So, yeah.
So do you find that you write paranormal, you're writing military, you're trying to move into thriller stuff, you just kind of write all over the place. Do you find that you get pigeonholed as a writer of one sort or another? And then people expect you just to write erotica, and then when you come out with a mainstream book, which you've done a lot of, they're kind of taken aback?
I don't know about taken aback, but my mainstream titles, which are not erotic and not romances, are shelved in the romance section.
Because of your name?
Because of my name. And when I had my first mainstream novel come out, I was really adamant, and I said, it's about a woman who gets carjacked, and there's no sex in it. She doesn't fall in love with her carjacker. And I said, can you please, you know, make sure that it's not shelved in the romance section, because people are going to be really... really pissed.
I read that one. I thought
it
was a romance.
The end?
I was so annoyed.
Right?
So.
And they
precious and fragile things.
Yes.
And it's really good. It's not a romance.
And it does not have a happily ever after ending. It is not a romance. But it was shelved in the romance section by the bookstore, who said Megan Hart books go in the romance section. And I said, what if I wrote a mystery? What if I wrote would you put a mystery in the romance section? If I wrote a thriller, would you put a thriller in the romance section? But because my mainstream books are still women's fiction, they still, I've had three now, and they're all, so. I don't know if that's me being pigeonholed as an author so much as the bookstore making a sales or a marketing decision. But yeah, I've had comments, you know, someone's like, I read the whole thing and I kept waiting for the romance. I'm sorry.
They didn't even do it. Sticker on the front saying this is not a romance.
They didn't. Mm-hmm. They don't even do it.
Mm-hmm. No. Aww. Sad face.
I have an editor she's one of the best in the business, Paula Eichelhoff out of Toronto with Harlequin, and she is very clear with me about my promise to the reader is the most important thing. Now, fortunately, I've been able to incorporate suspense and kind of intrigue into my stories, and my readers seem to enjoy that when I have that more. So that's good. Although, as my books have become more mainstream-ish, even in a category line, I did have comments from people laughing. I mean, they enjoyed it, but they're like, I can't believe you put a lesbian in there and you had a murder and, you know, all this, these different things. But, you know, we all grow as writers. Mm-hmm. I think, honestly, as writers, I think for myself, I pigeonhole myself too much. I think I'm the one that is going to define where I'm going to be, not anyone else. Megan is very confident about what she wrote, and she knows it doesn't belong in romance. And anyone who reads it will know with that particular book. I think that's the most important thing, is to know what we're doing and what the purpose of that story was.
I don't know that I'm pigeonholed. I'm still an up-and-comer. I mean, my first book came out in 2011, and Vampire Trouble is my seventh. It'll be out tomorrow, and they've all been paranormal. But when I pitched a third series to my editor at Sourcebooks, it was originally conceived as Angels in Uniform. It was a paranormal romance series. And she said, well, what if they weren't angels? What if they were just regular guys? And I said, are you asking me to write a contemporary romance? She said, yes, I am. And, you know, and she encouraged, and I was afraid I wouldn't be able to do it. And she said, no, I want you to, so I am. I'm branching out to contemporary. But the interesting thing is that, in terms of your readership, is that paranormal readers very often cross over and read contemporary romance. So the idea is it's a little bit easier to bring those readers with me to contemporary as opposed to if I were a contemporary romance author going into paranormal. So no, I don't think I've been pigeonholed. I guess we'll find out when Brave the Heat comes out next year. But
and this actually leads me to a question. You started 2011 and you're on book 7 that's coming out and you're working on book 8. Your first book came out 2007, mm-hmm. And you've got 8 books out now?
I want to say, yeah, there's 3 this year. There was one in May and then 2 in November, another super romance, so part of the Whidbey Island series, and then the other one is a Christmas anthology, also a Whidbey Island book.
Okay, and yeah. Megan, you started about a little over 10 years ago? 2000?
I first was published in 2002.
Right, so 12 years ago. And you have... you're so old. Because I think I started reading you about 12 years ago. But let me talk about the pace of how these books come out, because it seems like 7 books in 3 years.
Well, technically I'm writing my 10th, because I have a couple in the can.
Okay, so that seems a little excessive in terms of actually having to sit down and write these things. And I was thinking at the beginning, let's talk about category romances versus standalone, because Jerry here writes category romances for Harlequin, Megan writes for Harlequin, Sarah writes for Sourcebooks, and I assume that categories, because you know when you grow up and you see them with like 10 new ones that come out every month on the supermarket shelves, and you're like, oh my God, who writes all of these? There's so many, that the pace has to be so fast. But you all seem to be doing that, so it doesn't seem to be just a category thing. How do you keep up with this? Why do you write so fast? How do you write so fast? Is there a reason why the books are coming out fairly close to each other?
Okay.
I mean, like, yay. I mean, that's more books for me to read.
No, it is. I think the series is big, having a series. I know Sourcebooks, for example, if you pitch to them, they say, don't pitch us one book, pitch us a series. And that's what you want, because I remember when my first book came out, Unleashed, and all the work that goes into it, you know, they bought the book a year and a half before it came out. There's all, you know, all the work that goes into putting the book out, not just writing it, but everything else in between. And I will never forget, the book had gone live, you know, at midnight on Kindle. And at 4 that afternoon, I had readers, which was very nice, emailing me saying, I just finished it. When's the next one coming out? And I remember being like, what? I mean, it was wonderful. But at the same time, I whimpered a little bit because I was like, oh, God. So I think it's demand. And with digital publishing and with all the self-publishing that's happening, you have to be able to keep up. And it's a little bit crazy. And I was chatting with another writer friend, Cheryl Brooks, yesterday on the phone. And I said, I'm pretty slammed. I'm basically contracted through 2015, which is great. But, you know, sometimes I look at my schedule and I start to get hives because, you know, I have 4 kids and they all have lives and they're obviously my first priority and their needs come first. And of course, I have a wonderful husband who's incredibly, incredibly supportive and understanding. When I'm like, no, I can't do that because I have to finish this book and write 4,000 words today. And so, I don't know, I rambled a little there, but it's a lot, and sometimes it's easier than others. And sometimes I call my publisher and I say, can I have a new deadline, please?
Yeah, it does seem like there's an expectation that things will come out faster now.
Yes.
Definitely, and I think the digital advent has definitely made that happen. And my background's information systems, so I was on the internet when it was still Unix prompts, and I actually was there when the internet was invented, but we won't go into that. At any rate, I know, I look like I was a mere child prodigy. But the bottom line here, though, is anyone who's independently publishing, and the ebook publishers picked up on this quickly, readers are voracious and they want 3 to 5 books in a series and they want them together. So friends of mine that are strategizing on how to come out as self-pubs, they won't put one book out until they have 5 written. It's the fifth book, and this is part of statistics too in economics. The fifth book seems to bring up all the other books. So why not just put 5 out at once? Now, traditionally, with traditional publishers, they've put out like 3 book series at once, and you'll see that. Like this summer, you might see, I don't know, maybe Nora Roberts, I don't know what her schedule is, but they'll have, maybe she'll have a book June, July, August, you know, the 3 beach reads. That takes a tremendous amount of effort on the part of the author and the publisher. Because when you are holding a printed book from us, I know for me, I wrote that book at least a year ago. It was turned in 6 months ago. It's gotten tighter, though. It used to be like, say, 2 years from purchase to publication. Mm-hmm. It's much tighter now. And I know that I feel like I just turned in line edits. You know, the last time I saw my book that came out in May, I think was February or March, and then boom, it went right to print. Because technology's enabled that to happen, but also the pressure from the digital publishing world, you know, to have it quick. And instant gratification, we're an instant gratification society. And I just want to add also, I had a tour of Harlequin's publishing, their printing facility. I grew up 3 miles from it in Western New York. And they have print-on-demand capability. Print-on-demand capability has totally changed the surface of everything.
So. Do you feel pressure to write faster now than you did before, do you find?
No, actually, I'm trying to write less. I'm trying not to write 4 or 5 books a year. I would love to write one book a year and you know, have that book fund all my all my vacations and everything. I don't really feel pressure to write faster because I have always written generally between 3 and 4 full length novels a year, plus short stories and novellas in the interim to fill in the space. And that's because I'm fortunate enough that this is my full time job. So, you know, that's everybody who has a job has to go and do their job. You don't just get to lay around eating bonbons all day long and watching TV.
But isn't that what authors do?
Sometimes.
If they finish their book on time.
Yes.
How do you guys get inspired? Is it like a job? You sit down and you're like, okay, I'm going to like plot this out? Or do you have characters in your head who kind of go, this is my story, you're going to tell it, let me just go?
Both. Sometimes I'll be really inspired and I'll get up. I mean, I've gotten out of bed in the middle of the night to go downstairs to scribble notes on something. There are other times, though. I mean, because it is my job and I do have deadlines and I have responsibilities, I cannot wait for inspiration. I know that that some people, oh, I couldn't write today, my muse just, and I was like, my muse does what I tell my muse to do. She goes along with our conversation earlier this evening when I said, I don't do well with authority. I tell the muse what to do, but I can't wait for inspiration. in order to do the work, but I am often inspired. I think that's why I became a writer, because I will become inspired to write a story or dialogue will come to me, or a scene, and I'll sketch that out really quickly. The days when the inspiration is moving the work along are way, way, way more fun than mm-hmm. the days when it's just, I have to write 4,000 words right. today because I have a deadline. Mm-hmm. And I'm at the point, too, where, I mean, if your deadline is close enough, I have to write 4,000 words, and they all pretty much have to be the right ones. Mm-hmm. You know, because otherwise you're wasting your time. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that they are all good. They're just
a lot of pressure to make them good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In that case.
Yeah, I think you do have to be prolific today. It's just the way it is if you want to make a living at it. Now, especially when you start. Eventually, yeah, I'd like to be like John Grisham. He says he writes 6 months a year, and the other 6 months he always allotted for his children. That's wonderful. I don't think I'd be happy, though. For me, the characters come to me, so my characters show up. And they just drop out of anywhere. So I'm a character-driven writer. And because of that, I don't have any excuse. I have to sit down and put that on the page. But Stephen King, in his book on writing, said it superbly when he said, a plumber has to show up and lay pipe. That's what he does for a living. I'm a writer. I have to show up at the page and put words down. It would have been great to be able to sleep in this morning and get all ready for this and, you know, the long drive here, and I'll be driving back. But I had to get 1,200 words done, and that's a very, very light day. There's other stuff, the promo. I just sent out a bunch of proposals. It's a lot of work, but it's always, always forward thinking, you know. So again, it goes back to, if I want you to hold a book and be talking about my books, I've got to be doing all the legwork now.
I'd say it's both for me also. I mean, there are days when you're inspired and you have great ideas, and you think, usually it'll come to me if I'm stuck on something in a book. It'll be like 4:30 or 5 in the morning when you're waking up, and now your head's completely empty, just clear. And almost always the answer comes, what I was looking for will come there. And I always hope I'll remember what a brilliant idea it was.
Do you have a notebook by your bed?
I do. I don't always, usually I remember, but I find as I'm, you know, maturing, I'm finding my memory may not be quite as good as it used to. But honestly, the promo takes up a lot of time, you know, with the book coming out tomorrow, for example. A lot of my time this week that normally would have been for writing and working on Brave the Heat was, put towards blog posts. So I have 15 or 16 of those that I have to write for the blog tour. And honestly, with the kids, with the four boys right now, it's, you know, you can, what's that old expression? While you make plans, God laughs. You know, I have a lot of plans. I have plans. I'm going to write 4,000 words today. No, you're not, because so-and-so is coming home sick. And this one's calling you saying, you need to go to this place, right? You know, so I've learned, I used to get completely stressed out all the time, but I've learned to really go with the flow. And I've done enough books now and turned in enough stuff that I know it'll happen. And I just have to trust that I'll get it done. And it might be a little painful at the end for everyone. Sorry, babe. But I know it'll happen. And I try not to get too stressed over it, because it's a waste of time and energy.
So, as romance writers, we read a lot, and we read voraciously. What are you guys reading?
Well, can I go first?
Yes.
I finished my rough draft, which means when I leave tonight to go down to the beach for my vacation, I actually get to read as much as I want. So I have, on my stack of books that I plan to read, I have the new Stephen King, Mr. Mercedes. I have The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, because I have not read that yet, and everybody says it's so amazing. I also I got a book. It's called The Man Who Couldn't Eat, which I heard, I want to say it was NPR or something. It was a story about this guy, and he gets something happen. I don't know. I haven't read it yet, so I don't know what's going to go on with that, but I'm really excited about that. So those are just three, and I also have, I mean, literally, I probably have 80 books.
What is the last thing you read, not by you, that you loved?
That I loved?
Yeah, give us a suggestion.
What did I, what did I just read? Well, I've been reading a V.C. Andrews book forever, and I can't say that would count, because it's taking me forever to read it. But I did just read a book. What did I just, I can't remember.
Okay, we'll come back.
Come back to me.
Jerry, what are you reading?
I just finished Mr. Mercedes by Stephen King. Very good. Fantastic. I read Moving Day by Jonathan Stone. He's a new author I found. I love him. Moving Day is great because having done so many Navy moves, I'm like, why didn't I come up with this idea? That's perfect. And I like that he had some historical flashbacks in there. That's all I'll say. I don't want to do a spoiler. I like to read nonfiction. I like to research everything I do as well. I love early American history. So I did start a nonfiction book about the five key spies during the American Revolution. And of course, I can't think of the name of the book right now. But George Washington is poised and wondering what he's going to do about the British that have surrounded Manhattan. That's where I left that off. So I kind of flip back and forth between those.
Yeah. Nice. Sarah?
I just finished Her Perfect Mate by Paige Tyler, mm-hmm. which is a really cool paranormal romantic suspense. And just came out. I loved it. It was great.
So you're the only one here who's actually picked romance.
I'm a sucker.
The book that I... It is not the last book that I read because I was just on a plane and I read a book while I was on the plane and I really enjoyed it. But the last book that I read that I would say I loved was called Those Across the River. And it is not a romance, but it has a really significant and very moving love story in it. Aww. It's also paranormal, mystery, gothic, kind of weird horror. Mm-hmm. Those Across the River, nobody seems to have heard of it or read it, but everybody mm-hmm. should read it.
I'm sure we have it in the library.
Go check mm-hmm. it out.
We'll go look for it. Okay, and I'd like to open the floor up to questions, if anyone has anything they would like to ask our authors.
Did the author who went to the Naval Academy, how do you tie in naval intelligence with romance, and specifically, is there a part played by the femme fatale who wheedles confidential information out of a romantic partner? Is that, I mean, that seems to play some role in history, and I don't know how significant it is, but is that a connection that you make in your novels?
Well, there's a lot of romance in the Navy. The Navy's the romantic sea service, right? So I have had heroines in my books. You referred to them as a femme fatale. They are, that have been intelligence officers. But wheedling information out of people, no. The women in my book are strong, and I like them to use their sexuality to their benefit, to be with the partner they're with. They're not going to use their sexuality to manipulate someone. I'm not saying that if it didn't work to bring down, you know, some horrible terrorists, of course you do whatever you had to do. But no, I haven't done that yet, but that's a great idea. I think you took care of my 1,200 words for tomorrow.
Well, you've got your World War II one that you're going to work on. You can put a
femme
fatale there.
That's done. That's already turned in.
Yeah. Next one.
And my first book was World War II, and I do have the heroine in that book because we were talking also, I'm digressing, but about the lifetime of a romance. The everlasting line is the first line I sold to in category, and it was supposed to be a line that represented the entire lifetime of a romance, not just the meet and greet. And the line closed before my book got published, but we were informed that the line was closing. So that's how well, you know, it was a great line, wonderful books. And they just reprinted that book for me, which was lovely. But I do have a heroine in there during World War II who does kind of lead, she doesn't lead him on in a bad way, but she lets a Nazi officer kind of flirt with her and everything just so that she can live, you know. But she does get out of that scenario. She also kills her husband, but that's in the first chapter, so that's okay.
Is that the one you just gave us backstage?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. He was a Nazi sympathizer, so I didn't break any rules there. It's okay.
I'll be reading that one next. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
With the fast pace that you do, how much time is spent on revising what you wrote?
Well, remember when I said if I have to write 4,000 words a day, I try to make them the right words. I really enjoy the revision process. And what I find is that some people, I know writers who they will write and they will revise as they write so that at the end of their draft, they have to do very little revision. I'm much more of a let's it all out and, you know, write as fast as possible and get that draft done because I really enjoy the revision process. But I've been doing this for long enough that most of the time, what I need to revise is not grammar, spelling, and typos. It's plot holes or filling in pieces or shifting scenes around. So your question about how much revising, it really depends on how well I did my job the first time through in making sure that all the pieces are in the right places, and so that when it comes time to revise, it's a matter of sort of filling in and knitting everything together. Sometimes, though, I write it and there are huge holes that don't become apparent until I read through it and say, this is very lacking in this, or I did not at all tie up this, or whatever. So I try to, you know, you try to do the best that you can, but I have revised a book once before sending it in, and I have revised a book 17 times before sending it in. So, and of course, once you send it in, then the editor has something to say about it, and that can be as simple or as extremely complicated as however that works out.
I would agree with that. Sometimes it's a lot, sometimes it's not. Usually it's a lot. I tend to be one of those writers who kind of revises as I go, but then I'm not done. Then I go back and I read through it again. But then I get to a point where I have to stop and let it go, because if I could just keep going and going and fixing and changing. And even now when I read, I'll go back and read something that's published and out, and I'll be like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. Or I shouldn't use that word. Or I don't know, seeking perfection, knowing it'll never be perfect, so... Yeah, I tend to revise a lot, and then you just have to let it go. And like you said, when the editor sends it back to you, there's more revisions. So.
Yeah, and they're usually wanting you to revise the things you thought you did right.
Yeah.
How do you look at deadlines, because now I'm on deadlines for the first time in my life, uh-huh. and not let it shut down creativity and not let it paralyze you, because I have a book due July 30th.
Which is in like 3 days?
Yeah. No, July 30th.
No, July.
Oh, so I said July 3rd.
I have a whole... No, no, no.
Oh.
Oh, no. I'd be not here. As nice as you guys all are, I would not be here if it was due July 3rd. No, July 30th.
And what's your name?
Catherine Locke.
Kathy Falk?
Catherine Locke.
Catherine Locke.
Catherine Locke. Okay, great. So everybody listening to the podcast, go get Catherine Locke's book. What I've found for myself, once I get into my writing and I don't let myself do the social media, I blow off. Promo to me is second. If I don't have a good story to promo, forget it. So I am not allowing myself to do Facebook or Twitter in the mornings till the words get done, that kind of thing. Because I hate that icky feeling at the end of some of the horrible deadlines that you can get. But it goes back to what Megan had said. It's our job. So we can't really afford to let it shut us down. And, you know, one day at a time, one word at a time, one page at a time, it will get done. I've never missed a deadline in my life, thank God. I will email my editor sometimes, especially if I know she's got a lot on her plate and I know she won't look at my stuff right away. Mm-hmm. I will email and say, hey, is, you know, Monday.
Do you really need it by that day? Or are you going to sit on it for two months?
Yeah, because if I'm not going to get it, but... Now it's very interesting because we've got it down to a science kind of, and it does get turned around more quickly from her. So I realize I'm skirting the edge of that danger zone of the deadline thing. But that's where the new digital publishing has helped in the technology with the quick print runs. So we have longer to revise.
Anyone else have questions about or answers about deadlines?
I just finished my draft so that I can go on vacation and read and not work. But I mean, basically what it comes down to, it's your job, it's a contract. There's a lot, especially if you're on social media and you hang around with writers for any length of time, mm-hmm. there's a lot of whining about deadline. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of the way I feel about people who told me that when I had children, oh, you're going to be lucky to get a shower. I was like, oh, no, I'm getting a shower. If my child has to, you know, be in the baby seat next to me, crying for 15 minutes while I get a shower, I'm taking that shower. If I don't watch television and I don't get to read and I don't get to go out to dinner, I'm making my deadline because it is my job and it's a commitment. It's not a hobby. Now, but your question was also, how do you let it not stifle your creativity? That can be really hard because I sometimes feel like the more I sit and stare, the less I get done. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes what you need to do is you need to go watch TV or take a shower or go out to dinner with friends, because then it's going to be percolating and working, and then you're going to be like, yes, and it's so much easier and nicer to come back and do your 1,200 words or your 4,000 words or however many you have to do when you when you're feeling good about it. So it can be really hard, and it definitely can stifle the creativity, but still got to do it.
Thank you.
Is there a formula to be followed, and what are the portions of that formula that cannot be violated for it to be considered romantic fiction? Romance?
Happily ever after.
Yeah.
It must have a happily ever after. If it doesn't, it's not a romance. For me, that's the hard and fast rule.
And I think,
and
that,
I think in general.
I think that is the only one that still would... I mean, people think of romance as formulaic, and I would say that all genre fiction is formulaic in some way. That's what makes it a romance or a mystery or whatever. But romance rules have broadened. There are different subgenres. There are different things. There is no... I'll have people who will say, well, your editor will tell you you need to have the sex scene by page six, right? And I'm like,
no.
Page one, hello. Because that's what I do. But I've never had an editor say, okay, so a third of the book should be blah, 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 and this blah, 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 blah. And I think that may have been true before. But so, I mean, I have a formula. You probably have a formula for the way you write your books. But as an overall formula, I don't think there is one anymore, other than happily ever after, or it's not a romance.
Yeah.
How does that change with the series books where you've got the same characters going through the series where it's happily ever after for now?
Well, I have a different couples in each of my books in the series. So there, it's,
so you
I don't
get
have,
around that.
I do skirt around that a little bit. So, you know, you get to still see. But I have I have couples from the previous books come back. Okay. Like old friends, they come back for a visit. But yeah, mine are, so they're technically, they could be standalone, but they're part of the larger series.
I can answer that. I also have my series books in my Whidbey Island series, Dovetail, but I'm shopping around a Moscow set book of a naval attaché and his surgeon wife, not based on anybody I know, but maybe loosely.
Sure.
Now. But what I'm trying to do is have that same couple get called back to go to other embassies. I really think there's a lot of conflict in regular marriage day to day. I've been married 28 years to the same man, and I always joke and say I'm on the fourth marriage to the same guy. Actually, now that would probably be about the sixth marriage to the same man, because we're all changing constantly and different conflicts come up. And of course, it helps if I can have some espionage and have them in former Eastern Bloc countries and there's murders and all that. But different things can happen, and not just convenience, but just from the characters, from the emotions of their heart, we all change, and then how do they come back together in the end? Nora Roberts has done it brilliantly with her J.D. Robe series. I mean, it's just fantastic to watch that. Although I don't know, are they classified as totally romance?
We don't classify. That's the Eve Dallas books by J.D. Robe, who is Nora Roberts. We don't put them in romance in the library here. We put them in mystery.
Yeah, and they are mystery, yeah.
But I give them to romance writers or readers who want a good mystery with a good romance in it.
Yes.
Strong romantic elements.
Yes.
Right. Yes, strong romantic elements.
And that's something, from a librarian point of view, we struggle with. A book comes through. Is this a romance? Where do I put this? And bookstores have the same thing with your books going in. Is this a romance? Is this not a romance? And really, what I look at is it the main, you know, plot, the man and the woman, or the man and the man, or the woman and the woman, however it is. Do they have a happy ending at the end? And if I can't answer those two things definitively, it doesn't go in romance. And that's my own personal line. And I think everybody has a spectrum of that. So, but yeah, happily ever after. Or happily ever after for now.
Yeah.
That seems to be the consensus of the rule.
And isn't that life? That's life now. We're not buying into the 1950s. Picket fence deal anymore. It is just for now, whether you're married 28 years or, you know, because let's face it, Johnny Resnick from the Goo Goo Dolls, he might come looking for me someday, and it would be a conflict because I've been with the same man for so long, but do you know what I'm saying? So happily ever after for now. It's good.
Okay. Well, that's a rather depressing... Oh, yes, we believe in happily ever after and, the, you know, rainbows and unicorns, and just for now, though. Any other questions?
We all enjoy erotic reading in the same way that we enjoy gossip, but we feel embarrassed about enjoying it. And so Do you depend on your editor to provide that fine line about whether what you're writing about is presented delicately enough so that it can be enjoyed without being embarrassing?
That's what e-readers are for.
I personally perhaps have a higher threshold of embarrassment than other people, perhaps. I do not rely on my editor for any kind of distinction. I've been writing erotic romance and erotic fiction for a long time, long before 50 Shades of Grey made it mainstream and acceptable so that you don't have to be embarrassed, because everybody has read it and talked about all kinds of things. That, again, like I was like, it's okay. I don't need to know that about you and your three friends or whatever. My editor doesn't make that distinction for me. I am not embarrassed to write what I write. A lot of times I'll get a question, well, what do your parents think? And I'm like, I'm pretty sure they've had sex. At least twice. My dad does not read my books, but he gives my books to, you know, like the hairdresser, and you know, when he worked, he would give them to the ladies that he worked with. And my mom reads my books, and she claims that she skips over those parts. And I said, well, what did you read then, Mom? Because there's, you know, it's an erotic book. There are a lot of those parts. But I can't speak for other people who write erotic material. I've never really been embarrassed about writing it or reading it. I'm just shameless, I guess.
I do have to say that I would be embarrassed, or when I didn't have an ebook, I was embarrassed reading it on the bus.
Sometimes, I mean, the covers, I'm also very aware, I would be aware of the covers, because not because I'm embarrassed that I'm reading it, but because I would be aware that other people don't need to see half-naked people. You know, other people's sensibilities don't need to be subjected to the sight of something like that. But as far as me being embarrassed about that I'm reading it, no. But it would be more... Even often when I'm asked what I write, I'll say I write. Well, what do you write? And I kind of like make a judgment. I write lots of things. I write women's fiction. When I say erotic fiction, I don't always just blurt that out right away. Not because I'm embarrassed, but just because it's hard time and time again to get that, oh, you know, you don't want to have to defend yourself all the time. So even though I'm not embarrassed, I do make a judgment about whether I'll share that right off the bat with a stranger.
Gotta know your audience.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I was just going to say, one of the things I like to tell people, because I also am an author, and when they say, oh, I don't read that, and especially guys, I'll say, did you watch 40-Year-Old Virgin? Oh, yeah, I love that. Romance. And they sit there, and then I'll go through it, and they're like, oh. I'm like, you do, and you read it a lot more than you think you do. You know, so it turns it back a little on them.
That's true. I like that. It really does depend. Sometimes I want to say, who raised you? Why would you say that to a stranger? But, you know, and then mostly I don't say anything, but every so often, like, the guy will come up at a signing, and he'll say, I don't read that crap. And I say, well, do you have a special lady in your life? Well, no.
That's why.
I do. I have to say that when my first book came out, I took it to the Naval Academy for them to put in their book section of the midshipman's store, and the lady in charge informed me that they don't carry those kind of books here. And I said, oh, but you do. Nora Roberts and Suzanne Brotman, well, they don't write those kind of books. I said, their books are sexier than this one. It was a Harlequin super romance. Or actually, it was my first one. It was the Rendezvous to Remember. My book deserves to be on the table with the graduates, you know, next to John McCain and Jimmy Carter, as much, you know, I'm a grad too, but it, you know, it did get that stigma. And I wrote a letter to the manager of the store and everything, but, you know, some battles just aren't worth it. My readers are so wonderful, and that's what makes it worth it, because it's about story and love of story. You either have it or you don't.
Yeah, and if somebody's embarrassed, that's their issue, not yours.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I say I write for the people who love what I write, not for the people who don't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just want to tell one quick thing because we're talking about being embarrassed in your family. My favorite story ever is my grandmother, God rest her. She had been in the hospital, and I brought her a copy of my book for her to read. I forgot she had it, and I was leaving. She goes, oh, she was 89 at the time. Oh, dear, I read your book. I said, oh, you did? And I thought, oh, God. Yes, it's very spicy. I said, oh, well, I'm glad you liked it. I could feel my face getting there. She had 8 kids, mind you. And she leaned over, she smiled, she goes, that Will, he really must be something. And I was like, oh, my God, I have to leave now. I said, yes, he is. So.
Well, Megan, Jerry, and Sarah are going to have a book signing upstairs in the lobby. And that is it. No more prizes, but there are books upstairs, and
thanks,
all three of the authors will
thank
be
you
up
guys
there.
For coming.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Free Library of Great Conversations. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information on the series is available at freelibrary.org/authorevents.